I'd like to welcome our speaker today. Greta Brockman is a visiting scholar here at the Boise Center during this academic year, and her permanent posts are as senior researcher at the Institute for Social Research, as well as professor of sociology at the University of Oslo, where she received her PhD in sociology. Professor Brockman has published several books and numerous articles on international migration, covering topics such as EU policies, welfare state dilemmas, and historical studies on immigration. She is in much demand internationally as a lecturer and scholar. In addition to past visiting posts at Leuven, Berkeley, and Malmo in Sweden, before this year, she's been an active leader of numerous international research projects and evaluations on behalf of governments, universities, and businesses. As we shall hear today, her current research examines a variety of welfare state dilemmas, including the challenge of immigration in a Nordic comparative perspective. It has been a real pleasure to work alongside you this year upstairs, and it's an honor to welcome you here to our final lunch at Goldfield of the year. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Eric, and thanks to the Boise Center for hosting this talk, and not the least for hosting me for a full year. It's really a pleasure being here. The talk today is about immigration and the welfare state in Scandinavia, and I'm going to use Norway as the prime example, not the only example. The Nordic model is famous internationally for its social democratic welfare system, but less studied is its relation to immigration. Do you have immigrants in Norway is a very frequently asked question I get around in the US. And my current book project is a comparative study of the Scandinavian countries, highlighting the specificities of its immigration challenge. And I'm using historical explanations for the current situation, where there are quite some differences also internally in this so-called Nordic model, or actually the Scandinavian model in this context. There are differences in policy these days within the otherwise quite homogeneous region we're talking about here. And this book is a follow-up of another book that is coming next month in English. It was used to be a three-volume thing in Norwegian, but now it will come out as a one-volume book in English. The Scandinavian countries, as you can see from this title, have received immigrants for centuries. But the so-called new immigrants, which means immigrants coming from non-OECD countries, is a relatively new phenomenon. In Denmark and Norway, this is basically a post-1970 phenomenon. In Sweden, it has taken part for at least a couple of more decades. Prior to the era of the advanced welfare state in Scandinavia, immigrants were predominantly labor migrants. And they were covering the whole class range from so-called career migrants during the 18th and the 19th century. This person is a high-ranking German official, and he immigrated to Norway via education in Denmark. And he is actually, he's one of my ancestors, so I am particularly fond of this guy. But they, also other people along the class scale arrived. These guys are Swedes, and they are, at the turn of the 19th century, they are building the railway from Oslo to Bergen, which was very strenuous. The first touch of the new post-70s immigration was also in the form of labor immigration, basically from countries like Turkey, Yugoslavia, Morocco, but not least from Pakistan. And they were undertaking manual work, basically in industry and in the service sector. This labor immigration lasted only till the early or the mid-1970s, 1975 in the Norwegian case, where a new strict regulation was introduced, the so-called the immigration stop, as it was called in all the three countries. And then until labor migration again became a hot issue at the end of this century, and in particularly after 2004, when the EU extended its membership eastward. Then lots of labor migrants actually started coming again, particularly to Norway. So between 1975 and 2004, a distinct immigration regime has developed in which the welfare state plays a very significant role. But let's briefly look at the immigration stop first, because that is so fundamental to the issue I'm going to talk about today. The beginning of the 70s was the period where we got the so-called oil crisis in Europe and also in the States. This meant in Western Europe in general that the demand decreased, and there were worries about the social integration of immigrants. That became a stronger concern from the late 60s, actually. So the Scandinavian countries followed suit and also introduced a more restrictive immigration policy in the beginning of the 70s. And Norway was the last of the Scandinavian countries to introduce this regulation. And it was actually interesting as such that Norway introduced a strict regulation, because what was an oil crisis for most countries in Europe was an oil boom for Norway. That was exactly the period when Norway discovered oil in the North Sea. So even though Norway had an unprecedented need for extra labor at that time, Norway also followed the other countries in anticipating problems, sort of. It was a looking ahead kind of policy, and most important, this stop policy was not actually a stop, it was a selective regulation, which meant that the oil experts from the beginning, from the United States basically, they were possible to recruit regardless. So it was actually a regulation that was introduced to hinder low-skilled labor from the third world to access the area. That was the bottom line of the whole policy. But this regulation was a milestone for modern immigration policies in the whole of Scandinavia, and it depicted a tough front and a soft inside, which means that there was a strict external regulation where intentionally very few people were let in. And on the other hand, a generous inclusion policy for those who passed the gate. The rapidly growing welfare state was a powerful premise, as well as a significant actor in dealing with a new challenge presented by the inflow of people from poorer countries in the south. Scandinavia was, internationally speaking, countries with an egalitarian wage structure, with traditions of extensive public insurance systems, modeled to take care of all residents, regardless of their social background. And the state and the labor union had, to a large extent, a larger extent than most places in Europe, premised and influenced social change and development in these countries. So state control and planning were major ingredients in this system. So when the new immigrants started coming to the countries, it was natural to meet this social phenomenon with the same means as was used earlier on the national populations. Both the authorities and not least the labor movement wanted to have as much control as possible over these new inflow, and also over its consequences. So in equal treatment, responsible state management and welfare policy in this region explain much of the orientation of the immigration policy, by and large. Controlling inflow into the country, the first gateway to the territory, has been seen as a prerequisite for maintaining the specificities of this system. The fundamentally generous welfare model, which embraces everyone, but which can be undermined by excessive burdens, necessitates selection and delimitation in relation to potential new members from elsewhere. the most central precepts for regulation of immigration in Scandinavia have furthermore had a logical outcome in the so-called integration policy. And in this political framework, and if this political framework is to be maintained, EU inhabitants must be made part of it. Because good welfare states do not tolerate that substantial elements of persons or groups fall outside of society that disturbs the regulated world of work and burden social budgets. And this is really the core of the model when it comes to immigration to that kind of welfare states. And the immigration policy signals some sort of a duality here. Immigrants have not been desired at the outset, but if they manage to enter anyway, they must be incorporated in some way or the other. And the good state must go even further. It must also lay the basis for a positive attitude in the population for the integration project to succeed. It must, in other words, create support for this policy, which is financed through the tax system. But the question is, has this endeavor succeeded? As was the case in most receiving European countries, the stop had a number of unforeseen consequences. The immigration did not stop, it only changed character. There has actually never been more immigration to Scandinavia than after the stop. And this is the figure for Norway, and there are similar figures for Sweden and Denmark. And the reason for this is that when the legal labor channel was closed, apart from the one for skilled labor, the only channels that were open, the other channels, were tried out. So figures from the last 15 to 20 years reveal that persons from countries in the third world predominantly arrived through three channels. It's family reunification, as refugees, and as asylum seekers. And all these groups acquire residency, if they're lucky, on humanitarian grounds. And during this period, the relative number of immigrants from the developing world has increased significantly. It's right the opposite of what was the intention of the regulation that was introduced during the 70s. And what is most important in this context, this new pattern actually imposed an increasing burden on the welfare state. Because people did not come formally, at least, to work. Their access was justified through international conventions, and public welfare was extended from day one. Even though it was preferable, of course, that the newcomers entered paid work, this did not necessarily materialize. So then, since the mid-1990s, more or less accurately, the focus has been basically on what is called the welfare gaps in all three countries, mostly in Denmark and the least in Sweden. Immigrants are locked into what is called clientelization, a passive life, where the state or the municipality takes care of most everything, and where it is often not worth the effort to access the labor market. And the reason why is the high level of public transfers compared, which is important, compared to the prospective salaries that are available in the lower parts of the labor market. These people are unskilled. Over 90% are unskilled. So this situation has, in many contexts, triggered a comparison between the US and the EU in this case, but even more so Scandinavia. This is a situation which is very pointed, and we can go more into it maybe in the discussion afterwards, where I will be happy to hear your comments on the US side in particular. But there are structural and historical reasons for this systemic weakness that it is increasingly seen as. the endeavors to include immigrants have their basis in a combination of moral and political obligations. Loyalty to the social democratic platform, supplemented by principles of human rights, are there, as well as self-interest, which is also very important. This is not only a humanitarian gesture to people from other parts of the world. There is a recognition that a society cannot function smoothly if a large section of the population is marginalized and socially excluded. And the labor union has opposed any generation, of course, of a reserve army of cheap labor. The labor unions are extremely influential in this respect in all three Scandinavian countries. And they are also concerned about the possibility of undermining the achieved standards, more generally speaking, in working life. In earlier times, receiving countries could wait for things to settle over time. Newcomers could slowly adapt to the new conditions, at least after two or three generations, and in due course came to be much like the new home country's population and their changeable ways of life. The US, of course, is famous for this development. But immigrants were, in fact, also slowly assimilated in Scandinavia. Or they were actively pressured, even violently pressured, into adopting the majority's way of life, such as was the case with the Sami population in Norway in earlier times. But modern welfare states do not have the time to let history do the job. Nor do they have political legitimacy to pressure anyone too strongly to become like the majority overnight. And therefore, inclusion needs to be managed. The process needs to be stepped up, sort of. So integration has become a compromise between equality and pluralism. But this model is not necessarily smooth sailing, politically speaking. The authorities need to strike a balance between exercising so-called fair terms in keeping with human rights principles and moral considerations, but they also has to listen to popular sentiments in order to retain legitimacy and also to avoid that parts of the majority begin to act like a threatened minority, so to speak. And here there are today significant differences between the Scandinavian countries, particularly the last 10 years, the changes have occurred. And I will go more into that maybe also in the discussion afterwards, but before that I will dwell a bit more on the dilemmas this kind of welfare states have to grapple with in relation to immigration. Immigration policy is generally divided in two main spheres. The external sphere of admission, who is given the opportunity to enter, and an internal sphere of rights and possible integration, what terms the entrants are offered. Politically and legally, these spheres are usually treated separately. On the one hand, regulation of admission to a country is closely connected with the nation state's historical right to control its territory. And on the other hand, civil, social, and political rights for aliens who settle in a country are closely linked to the country's long-term development as a Rechtsstaat, as it's called in German, a state ruled by law. And in modern welfare states, these include measures such as labor market schemes, social care and general welfare, education, language training, support for NGOs, etc., etc. It's a long list of so-called actions taken by the governments. The post-1970s immigrants brought to light the extensive and also very complicated interplay between these two main spheres of the immigration policy. This 1970s legislation was based on a somewhat dual strategy where there was a presumed causal relationship between external control and conditions for integration. it was believed that the successful integration policy was dependent on a strict entry control. And conversely, free immigration was viewed as a threat to peaceful coexistence among groups of the population. And this dual strategy reflects both realpolitik and rhetoric. Free immigration may, under certain conditions, threaten the community by undermining central government regulation of both the labor and the housing market, for instance, and also disturbing social planning in general. And in the longer term, free immigration may also, I underline may, alter the premises underlying the type of welfare states built up in the whole region after the Second World War. One is afraid of more permanent segregation of the population along ethnic lines, which one can already see tendencies in this direction. And the dual strategy's rhetorical element refers to the so-called moral compromise inherent in it. Declarations of intent to stimulate integration of established immigrants may sometimes function as a legitimization of the stricter immigration control. This is a very, it's a subtle, but it's very, it's an obvious connection. At the same time, a country's direct and indirect integration policy may also influence the number and the type of immigrants who actually come. So a dilemma is inherent in a state's granting of rights and welfare benefits to newcomers. These goods represent, on the one hand, a desirable and necessary aspect of this Rechtsstaat principle in modern welfare states, and they may also actually serve as a premise for a successful integration of people. This is a very basic philosophy of the welfare state, that rights promote integration. That goes for the whole population, not only immigrants. But it's nevertheless a fact that a generous integration policy and a generous rights policy, more generally speaking, may constitute a pull factor in relation to immigrants, more generally speaking. A pull factor in this context for potentially unwanted migrants. It's necessary to improve immigrants' functionality in society, but it's nevertheless also constituting what is increasingly called the magnet effect. And this magnet effect is becoming more and more controversial, but also more and more prevalent in the EU area, not only in Scandinavia. It's important even within Scandinavia, but it's definitely a factor within the whole of the basic EU, the EU 25. And the thing is that one has had what is often called the race to the bottom tendency, where every single country in the EU tries to undermine each other's generous welfare policy towards immigrants, not to be too attractive. We're not all the time talking about immigrants that are not wanted. But this has increasingly also a very conflict-ridden area within the Scandinavian area, because Denmark has embarked on a much more restrictive welfare policy towards immigrants than Sweden and Norway. And as a result of that, the figures in Sweden in particular, but also in Norway, has risen tremendously after Denmark cut down. So it's a fairly, one can read the effects of this out of statistics. At least one can believe that that is what one is reading out of the statistics, but it seems to be a fairly plausible hypothesis. But then the last major point here is a very significant change that has taken place not only in Scandinavia, but in the whole of the EU after the end of the 1990s. One has based the thinking in Western Europe since the 70s, actually, that immigrants are not wanted, as I say. They are conceived as a burden on welfare. They have been conceived as consumers of welfare, which has been de facto also true because of the patterns of immigration that has been a result of the regulation. But there is a fairly recent awareness that aging society calls for a more liberal labor immigration policy recently. So this conventional wisdom on welfare has been turned upside down. And it is now widely discussed and believed that supplies of foreign labor are necessary to maintain economic growth and not least the level of the welfare in society. And this new approach emphasizes the role of immigrants as producers of welfare. And this new situation inspired a very pointed headline in the New York Times 2 years back. But this situation is, of course, only a new twist to the selectiveness of immigration policies. I mean, the welfare state needs some kind of immigrants and wards off others. That is not new. That has actually gone on in the Norwegian case since the year 900, where we started the historical study that I showed you in the beginning here. But this situation is becoming increasingly controversial within and between the Scandinavian countries as well. And it has also spurred greater differences, as I said, within Scandinavia. And the core of the controversy before the cartoon drawings took over all public attention, more or less, in the area, before that it was the welfare burden. And I should have shown that earlier. That's the most attractive new kind of immigrants that all the Scandinavian countries want, even all Western European countries, in fact. But this was what I was searching for. This is to show the differences internally in Scandinavia right now. It goes up to 2003, and this difference is accentuated even further after this year. And Sweden is an interesting country these days when it comes to both the welfare state and to the burden of immigrants. This is in terms of burden, really, because we're talking about asylum seekers. And Sweden actually last year received more asylum seekers than any other country in the world. Substantially more than the US. The figures were 36,000 in Sweden, and the US received 32,000 last year, Canada 25,000, and then Denmark 2,000, and Norway 6,000. So you can imagine that there is quite some unease among the governments in Scandinavia when it comes to this, because this is policy induced to a large extent also. But when it comes to the connections between the welfare state generosity and immigration, it's sort of an inverse situation from what one could believe, because within Scandinavia, Sweden is the country with the biggest problems, economically speaking. I mean, they had a large crisis in the beginning of the 90s in their welfare state system. Nevertheless, Sweden is the country that is most generous in relation to humanitarian immigrants. And that's why they keep getting almost all of them also. And Denmark within Norway has the oil, of course, which makes the country in an exceptional economic situation. Denmark doesn't have oil, but Denmark has a very, very sound economy. The soundest economy in many ways in the Nordic area, at the same time being the least generous of the countries now in terms of rights and goods in relation to immigrants. But I think I'll leave it there, and I'm looking forward to your US interventions.
All right, thank you very much.